Wow, that worship set gets me going. I don't know about you. It literally sets us up well, too, for today, because today I get to share with you one of my favorite stories in the Bible. You know, we're in this series that we're calling I Am, and we're looking at how Jesus described himself to say, what can we learn from the words of Jesus to learn what is he telling us about himself? And we've had some great messages so far. I'm the bread of life, I am the light of the world, and then we did 2 weeks on kind of the I'm the gate and good shepherd and how Jesus is that for us. But today we come to my favorite. And it's my favorite because most of the time when Jesus said, I am, it was accompanied with a miracle. When he said, I am the bread of life, he'd just come off feeding 15,000 people with 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. It was miraculous. And he used that to say, I am the bread. I'm the one that can satisfy. And then when we talked about the gate and the shepherd, we'd just come off this moment where Jesus healed a man born blind, been blind his whole life. And in this moment where the guy testifies to what Jesus has done, the people in the temple, the synagogue, they kick him out and they say, you can't be here anymore because you keep talking about Jesus and what he's done. And that's where Jesus steps in and he says, hold on just a second. I'm the good shepherd. I'm the gate that lays in the doorway for the sheep because I protect the sheep. I provide for the sheep. And not only that, I lay down my life for the sheep. And today, when we come to the I Am message of Jesus, it's also accompanied by a miracle. And it's really the mother of all miracles because the way it happens and the way it's done is just incredible. You see, the people that Jesus was around, the people that were following him, they'd seen him do some amazing things. They'd seen the loaves and fishes multiplied. They'd seen him heal people of various diseases. And they'd heard about him raising people from the dead, even though they really hadn't experienced that firsthand. But today, they're going to experience it firsthand, something that they didn't really know was possible. They'd heard about it, but didn't know. And they were going to see that Jesus was really more than they ever imagined possible. And the story begins by introducing us to some friends of Jesus. And these aren't just normal, casual friends. These are very important friends because in the story, and it's in John chapter 11, if you read through that, and we're not going to read all 44 verses today. You're welcome. I'm just going to tell it to you. In those 44 verses, several times, John, who wrote the gospel, says, Jesus loved them. Jesus, these were the people Jesus loved. And so we get the idea that this is more than just a casual acquaintance, that this is quite possibly a friendship for Jesus that he could go to their house, he could take off his sandals, kick off his sandals and sit back a little bit and just be comfortable around this level of friends. He'd spent time in their homes and he enjoyed the hospitality of Mary and Martha and Lazarus. And those are names that you're probably, if you've been in church, you're not unfamiliar with. We know this is we know it's special because of how Jesus refers to them. But the story opens with bad news. It's horrible news. Lazarus is sick. And this isn't just an everyday illness. It wasn't what I'm struggling with right now, cough and whatever. You know, it wasn't an upset stomach. It wasn't, you know, all these allergies. It was serious enough that the sisters sent someone to find Jesus. And it's interesting that they know where Jesus is, so they obviously kept up with him because they send this messenger out and they say, go find Jesus and go tell Jesus that the one you love is sick. And they did this because they knew they'd seen Jesus heal before. And if anybody can help our brother, it's going to be Jesus. So get him, bring him here, and he'll take care of it. And so the messenger finds Jesus, and he gets Jesus the word, and he tells him, the one you love is sick. And Jesus hears that, and Jesus says to the messenger and the disciples as they're listening to him, he says, this sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it. And then it goes on to say, now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. But then there's a twist to this story. Something very peculiar happens. Because instead of Jesus turning to his disciples and saying, all right, boys, pack the bags, let's go, my friend is sick, which is what we would do, right? I mean, think about it. If you had a really close friend, someone that people said, oh my goodness, you love that person. If you found out they were sick and you knew you could do something about it, you're on the way. You're running as fast as you can. And yet, what John records is that just the opposite happened. John writes, "So when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed where he was 2 more days. Okay, now that brings to mind some questions for me. Why are you telling me that you loved him so much if you're just going to kind of stick around and hang out where you were for a couple more days? How is it possible that you seem to be so callous and so uncaring that you don't immediately take off to take care of your friend? I don't know about you, but that's a question. It's like if I'm in that moment, if I'm a disciple, I'd be like, what's up, Jesus? Why are we sticking around here? What are we doing? And it's a puzzling question because our natural inclination, what we think Jesus, because we think Jesus is love. And so he should just run right away as quick as he can to heal Lazarus. But he doesn't. He sticks around 2 more days. And after 2 days, Jesus then tells his disciples, all right, guys, let's go. Now it's time to go. And we find out that in the story, that when Jesus makes the decision to go, it's not just Brent deciding to travel to Waukee in a very benign kind of movement. No, Jesus had already raised the awareness of the religious leaders. They were already pretty agitated with him. They were ready to kill him. And by him going back to Judea was going to put him in a lot of trouble. He'd already tried to be killed, tried to be stoned. And his disciples know this, and they start raising these questions about why are we doing this? Are we sure we need to go? Is this really worth it to go back? Because we know trouble's going to be waiting for us. And Jesus gives kind of a cryptic answer about walking in the daylight, which is really his way of saying that, you know what? Everything's going to be fine until the time has come for this to happen. That it'll be fine until the time has come, until the crucifixion, until the arrest. But even then, we find that Jesus is willing to put himself in harm's way to get back to his friend. Jesus tells his disciples something that he knew that they didn't know. He says to them, he says, our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I'm going to go and wake him up. Now, the disciples are often a little thick-headed, didn't often quite understand exactly what Jesus was talking about. And they look at Jesus and they're like, oh, if he can sleep this off, why are we going back? Let's just hang out. I mean, seriously, let him get a couple of, 8 hours, 10 hours of sleep. He'll be fine. And Jesus, he has to break it down like he always did. He says, he's not asleep. I'm using a figure of speech, guys. And he tells them plainly, he says, Lazarus is dead. And for your sake, I am glad I was not there so that you may believe. But let us go to him. Okay. Again, words of Jesus. And there's a moment where you're just kind of going, who is this guy? He's dead, and I'm glad I wasn't there. I'm glad he died. What is going on here? How is this possibly the same Jesus that we've seen doing all these miraculously compassionate things? And in this moment, he seems so callous to his friend's predicament. But regardless, off they go. They arrive to find out that Jesus was correct. Lazarus was dead, and he'd been in the tomb for 4 days. What Jesus knew and what the others probably hadn't put together yet is that Lazarus most likely died immediately after the messenger left. That even if Jesus had immediately turned and went to Judea, Lazarus would have been dead. He would have been in the tomb 2 days instead of 4. So it really didn't matter when Jesus left. But it raises that interesting question of, Jesus knew Lazarus was already sick. He could have been there before he ever got sick and been able to heal him, but he didn't. But Lazarus is in the tomb 4 days, and this is significant because there was a well-known Jewish belief at the time that is really kind of crazy to us, but this is really what they believed. They believed that if you died and you were put in the tomb, that your soul would hover around your body for up to 3 days. But after 3 days, it was gone, and then you were really dead. But on that fourth day, you were dead. But if something happened on days 1, 2, or 3, they'd be like, oh, you just resuscitated. It was fine. Yeah, exactly. Strange beliefs. But for Lazarus, what that tells us is that all hope was gone. There was nobody there around the family, none of the mourners that were there. Nobody was sitting there looking at the tomb going, today's the day he's coming back. Day 4 was there. That belief was very real for them, and he was gone. It was never going to be changed. And we read that Jesus comes back. And even before he gets into the village, he is met by Martha. And I just take a moment and picture this in your mind. Close family, Mary, Martha, and Lazarus, brother and sister, loved each other dearly. And as she runs out to meet Jesus, you can almost see her face swollen and puffy from the grief and the tears that she has been shedding for days. And she looks at her good friend Jesus, and she says to him, "If only you had been here, my brother would not have died. But I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask." In that moment you think, oh, she's expecting something great, but really she's not. Listen to the rest of the exchange between her and Jesus. Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." And Martha said, "I know he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day." The last day was this idea that when time ceases to exist, when it's all said and done, that there would be a resurrection of the dead. And that's what Martha is thinking about, that in the end, yes, Lazarus will rise up, not in this moment right here today. And Jesus says to her, he says, "I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live, even though they die. And whoever lives by believing in me will never die." Do you believe this? "Yes, Lord," she replied. "I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, who has come into the world." You continue to read the story and you find out that Mary comes out with her mourners around her to meet Jesus. She's been crying as well. They're all upset. The mourning process in this time period was a lot different than for us. You know, we're very dignified when people die. You know, I can't tell you the number of times in the last 2 years where we've had funerals, and I've had spouses, widows, widowers, on the day of the funeral break down in tears and look at me and say, "Oh, I'm so sorry for crying." And I think, you should cry. It's okay. Back in the day, they would hire mourners to come, and they would help you cry, and there would be instruments playing that would help you grieve, and this was all a big process. And so think about Mary running to Jesus and her entourage coming with her with all the wailing, "Oh," you know, that's going on. And she runs out to Jesus, and she also says, "Jesus, if only you had been here." And we read a very interesting thing that happens to Jesus, because in that moment, we read, it says that Jesus was deeply moved and troubled. Troubled to the point of tears, where we get the shortest verse in the Bible, John 11:35, it says Jesus wept. But there's kind of a question, what is Jesus crying about? What is it that has him so troubled? Because when you read in the Greek, the word that's translated deeply moved, the behind the scenes of that word is it's like a horse that snorts. Just kind of a reaction. It's not kind of a sad thing. It's almost like an angry thing. And so when anybody here been so angry you cried before? That was my experience growing up. I'd get so mad, I'd just cry all the time. Just, you know. But in this moment, Jesus is troubled to the point of tears, and he's outraged, he's angered, not with tears of grief. He wasn't looking at his friend Lazarus and going, "Oh, Lazarus dies," because he knows something significant is about to happen. He wasn't troubled by Mary and Martha's questions, because we never see him correcting them or rebuking them for what they've said to him. And he wasn't even troubled about the resurrection, even though there was a lot of confusion about what he was saying in that moment. Jesus is angry at death and devastation, the devastation that it brings. You see, because you have Jesus Christ, who is the author of life, who spoke in the beginning and worlds were created. And here he stands in this moment in front of a tomb that has taken his friend. And he's angry about it because he says, "I didn't make it this way. I didn't design it for you to have to suffer disease and death and sickness and all these things." And he's standing there in that moment, and he's face to face with his enemy, death. And he's mad about it. He's angry. because he knows all the damage that death has done. And you read on in John, and it says, and Jesus, once more deeply moved, came to the tomb. It was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. That was very common. Take away the stone, he said. And I love the King James in this next part because it's a comical interaction between Jesus and Martha, very pragmatic and practical Martha. There's the dead body that's been laying in this tomb in the heat for 4 days. In the King James, you got to love it. It says, oh, Lord, surely he stinketh. You know, I mean, yeah, right. You get it? I mean, it's like, yeah, there's some practical concerns here. This is not, you know, no matter how much perfume they've put on that body, that's not going to cover up the smell of a decomposing corpse. But Jesus then said, did I not tell you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God? So they took away the stone, and Jesus looked up and said, Father, I thank you that you have heard me. Interestingly enough, that's an idea that tells us that he has prayed before. He already knows what's going to happen. This is kind of a secondary prayer, being prayed out loud for everybody else to hear. It would have been common. He probably had his hands raised to heaven as he said this. Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may believe that you sent me. And when he said this, Jesus called in a loud voice, Lazarus, come out. Put yourself in that moment. I might be freaking out just a little bit. The tomb is open. The stone's been moved away. And Jesus, you know, you probably have a few little questions, doubts in your mind. Can he really do this? I mean, he'd calmed the storm, and I'd seen that, and I was a little surprised by that. He's healed people immediately, blindness, all leprosy, all these. Okay, but can he really do this? And with that shout, it says the dead man came out, his hands and feet wrapped with strips of linen and cloth around his face. And Jesus said, take off the grave clothes and let him go. Can you imagine that moment? Can you imagine being in that moment? How frightening it would be, how overwhelming it would be, how exciting it would be, how joyful it would be, heart-stopping even. And here standing before them was a man who was clearly dead and is now probably not walking, you know, doing some kind of out with the grave clothes on to get out. What a story. I don't know, but as I read through that story and as I've studied this passage a few times, there's a lot of things that I think about that I question in this story, things that don't quite make sense to me. Because I think about in my own life, when situations and circumstances come to me or happen to me, they can be situations that really make me begin to question my faith, question Jesus. And so I started thinking about the questions that maybe you have too as you read through this. And it starts with a question about God's love. God's love. John reiterates it several times. He loved them. The one you love is sick. And I know sometimes you probably can come to church and you hear somebody like me stand up here and we talk about God's love all the time. For God so loved the world, he gave his only son, John 3:16. In Romans, nothing can separate us from the love of God. Not height, not depth, not angels, not demons, not things in the past or present or things to come. Nothing in all creation can separate us from the love of God. But sometimes life happens. And we assume that because something bad happens to us, does God still love me? Now, I must admit, it doesn't seem that Mary and Martha had this struggle. They were glad to see Jesus. They never questioned his love. But I can almost imagine, I can picture that those around them probably did. I can even hear the whispers when Jesus gets on the scene and others are looking and saying, well, of course he's dead, Jesus. How long have you been gone? Why weren't you here? You say they're your friends and you're nowhere to be found. If you loved him, why wouldn't you have gotten here right away? For us, maybe it's the phone call with the medical test results. Or when that person we thought we could trust betrays us. Or worse yet, abuses us. Or the moment when that relationship we thought would last forever ends. The job is lost. See, when we've been devastated by the events of life, it's very difficult to believe that God still loves us. It's very easy for us to question that. Because in those moments, it can seem like we're left on our own to fend for ourselves. And we can begin to believe that he doesn't care about us anymore. And if we're really honest, we can get to a place where we even begin to question the goodness of God. Sometimes in trying to make sense out of these situations, some very well-meaning Christians can come alongside us and tell us things like this. It's okay. God did this for a reason. Anybody ever heard that? I'm not going to ask if anybody's ever said that. We need to take that statement out of our vocabulary. Yes, I am a firm believer that God can use anything that happens to us. God can redeem anything that happens to us. He can bring good out of anything. But I want you to understand that just because something happened doesn't mean it was God's design. God didn't make Lazarus sick. A broken world full of disease and sickness made Lazarus sick. And even though something bad happened, God in his love can use it and bring something good out of it. You see, in this moment, the crowd had already experienced Jesus as healer and teacher, feeder, provider. They see him as one who hates sin and disease and death as much as we do. And in this moment, what they're going to experience is that Jesus truly is the resurrection and Jesus is life. And not many days from this moment that we're talking about today, Jesus himself will go to the cross. He will suffer his own death and he will rise from the dead and he will crush death once and for all. He'll remove the sting of death. And in this moment, that is what he was teaching them. That even though something bad had happened, God could still turn it around and use it for his good. Something else I also see here about our struggles and circumstances through Mary and Martha is sometimes I think we can mentally understand the goodness of God. We can mentally wrap our minds around it. But sometimes we get stuck in our if-onlys. Mary and Martha both said it. If only you had been here. If only this had happened, Jesus. And maybe our if-onlys are a little different. If only I had gotten that job. If only my father had loved me. If only that person hadn't treated me that way. If only my marriage had survived. If only they had been healed. And what I want you to know is that just because we may say if only doesn't mean we have no faith. Because if you look at Mary and Martha, they were still women full of faith, totally confident and believing in Jesus. And yet Lazarus still died. You know, sometimes it's very popular among televangelists today to say things like this. If you just have enough faith, you can control a situation. And it's just not true. I was so encouraged. There's a very popular prosperity gospel preacher who for, good golly, 30 years has been teaching that message. And recently she came out and she said, I was wrong. Sometimes bad things just happen to people because we live in a broken world. And I thought, praise God, that is what happens. But we get stuck in these if only sometimes. If only this had happened. As I said, you know, sometimes we bring those to God and we're reluctant to be honest with God. Because we assume that God is being like, what's wrong with you? You're supposed to trust me. And yet that's not what we find with Jesus and Mary and Martha. When they come to him and they say, Jesus, if only you'd been here. As I said, he didn't rebuke them. He didn't correct them. You know what he does? He loves them. And what that reminds us is that God can deal with our if-onlys. Because God is more patient and accepting than we can possibly imagine because he is driven by his love for us. But I will say that our if-only statements could be a problem because they could be a symptom of something deeper, especially if we get stuck in the if-onlys. If we get stuck, we start to believe that it is too late for God to do anything about our situation or our life. Which I think that happened to Martha. She didn't think Jesus could raise the dead. Sure, a resurrection will happen eventually one day. But she wasn't expecting a miracle, and maybe you're not either. But I think as we read through this, Jesus is inviting us to not get stuck looking at the past and what could have been. But he invites Martha and Mary to look to the future and see what can be. Sometimes we do get stuck. And Jesus is saying, I realize there's pain. I'm not saying ignore it. I'm not saying act like it didn't happen. No, it's very real. But what I'm saying is let's turn your attention. Don't miss what is before you. Don't miss the experience that I can give you, what I can reveal to you about me through this. And understand I'm a God that loves you. And even though you're suffering, I'll be there with you in your suffering to guide you through it. And it's in this where he calls Martha and Mary to look to the future that he makes that most incredible claim about who he is. That's where he says our I am statement. He says, I am the resurrection and the life. And this is an earth-shattering statement. As I said, these people weren't unfamiliar with the idea of resurrection. They believed it would happen. One day when time was over, the people would rise and meet Jesus, and it would be great. They'd spend eternity with him. But Jesus says something that takes that idea and that expectation and just destroys it. Because Jesus says the resurrection isn't some future event. He says the resurrection isn't some doctrine that addresses eschatology or dispensationalism or pre or post or amillennialism or Armageddon. It's none of those things because when Jesus says the resurrection is not an event, it's not a doctrine. The resurrection is a person. That it is him. It's the person standing right in front of Martha in that moment. And he's saying to her, stop believing, stop focusing on this abstract belief in an event that is coming. Trust in the one who can give you life right here and right now. In that moment, no one expected a resurrection. They expected a shoulder to cry on. They expected calming words from the teacher or a teaching about death. But what they got was a resurrection. What they experienced was life. And we need to understand that Jesus very rarely sees things the way we do. When he sees death, when we see death, Jesus sees opportunity. When we see finality, Jesus sees hope. My question for you this morning is, where do you see death in your life? What seems like an end to you? You see, some of you here today need a resurrection in your life. You've tried to find life on your own. You might even settled for cheap substitutes. You filled your life with activity, hoping that that would numb the pain. Because if we're busy, we won't feel the emptiness inside. We soothe ourselves with food and drink and entertainment and relationships, anything to keep us from facing the hurt and the pain that our circumstances have left behind. We numb ourselves, or we try to, but every time it wears off. And no matter how many spices we put on it or how much perfume we put on it to cover up the decay, without Jesus, all we're left with is a smelly tomb. Jesus makes this powerful statement to us today. What is dead in your life? Where do you need a resurrection? Maybe it is your life. Maybe spiritually you realize that you've been searching for answers and Jesus has been calling, but you've never grabbed on to Jesus. Jesus is saying, I can take the spiritual death that you've suffered and I can bring you to life. Maybe you've been following Jesus, but on more than one occasion, life has just punched you in the gut. And Jesus says, come to me. Bring me what has died in your life. and let me bring life from death. Scholar N.T. Wright wrote this. He says, Jesus will meet your problem with some new part of God's future that can and will burst into your present time, into the mess and grief with good news, with hope, with new possibilities. See, the story of Lazarus' resurrection isn't just about Lazarus. It's a foreshadowing of what is to come, of Jesus' own death and resurrection. You know, this story of Jesus' resurrection is not some made-up story by radical zealots. It's an actual event captured by people who were and were not following Jesus. It really happened. And it's through the death and the resurrection of Jesus that we too can experience life. We can experience our resurrection. Because Jesus is saying more than just, I am the resurrection. He is looking at each of you today saying, I am your resurrection. The same power of God that came upon the lifeless body of Jesus Christ in that tomb. The same power of God that came upon the lifeless body of Lazarus is the same power of God available to you today. And He can take all that you've experienced and make something beautiful out of it. You know, if you read a few verses past the story, 45, 46 and on in chapter 11 of John, you see that there were these varying responses to this whole story, this whole event. Some people went and ran and tattled. It's kind of funny, honestly. They ran to the religious leaders. Oh my goodness, you won't believe what Jesus did. There were some that when they heard what had happened, they decided this is it. He's got to die. He's got to go. But we also read that in that moment, others believed. It's the question Jesus asked Martha. It's the question I ask you today. Do you believe? Do you believe that Jesus can give you life? Do you believe that He can take the broken pieces of your life and make something beautiful out of it? I'm not asking you to believe in a future event. Good God, I'm not even asking you to believe in this right here or me. I'm asking you, do you believe in Jesus? That's the question we close with. Michelle, go ahead and come. Praise team, go ahead and come. You see, you can't hear the story of Lazarus or the resurrection of Jesus and just walk away. Because Jesus demands a response. You either look at it and say, I believe it, yes, I embrace it wholeheartedly, or you look at it and you say, no, I don't get it. You hear a message that says Jesus can take the brokenness of your life and redeem it and restore it, and you say, yes, I believe that, or you say, no, I don't. This morning, my simple question is, do you believe? We're going to sing a closing song, and as we do, I'm going to invite you, if you are sitting there today and you think, I need to believe, I've never taken that step to say, I want to follow Jesus. I'm going to be down front. There'll be some other people down here, and we're ready and willing to pray with you. It'll be the most awkward and uncomfortable 10 seconds of your life to step out from where you are and walk down that aisle and say, would you pray for me? But let me encourage you, do it. Step out. Embrace the resurrection and the life, not that event to come, but the person of Jesus Christ. Maybe you're here today and you just can't see the light. You can't see the life. You just see death all around you. Your life just keeps punching you in the gut. And you say, I need help. We're here to pray for you in that as well. Do you believe in the resurrection and the life?